How am I going to do that? Now, once I begin to develop an intricate system of dikes and channels and dams and pumps, I have something that is going to root me where I have built all that. This is not portable. You don't build something like this and then move on. You build something like this, and then you settle where you built it, and more and more and more people settle. And this permits you, for example, as you water this land along the course of a river, to grow more food, to grow more kinds of food, to grow food more predictably, and to feed a population more stably than had ever been the case before. But as you do this, as you begin to concentrate populations and to produce predictable, replicable food supplies, you begin to confront certain very interesting problems of social, and then beyond that, of political organization. You know, in biblical language, we think that there must be hewers of stone and drawers of water. There must be people who do different things. Who decides? Is this done by social class? Is this done by some other mark of privilege? Is this done by aptitude? It's very hard to say at the very earliest moments how you make these distinctions, how you draw these differentiations. But the fact is that there will be people in society, for instance, who will tend the fields, perhaps other people who will tend the flocks, perhaps other people who will work on the irrigation systems. And then eventually there will be craftspeople, and there will also be persons charged with religious responsibilities, perhaps others charged with governing responsibilities. As the system goes, it'll get more and more and more complicated. But we're at the emergence of the specialization of labor. And the specialization of labor puts us at the front edge of political differentiation. Now, at one level, of course, we can say that this is all relatively simple. It is societies providing for themselves their most basic and fundamental needs, food, in one way or another. If we control the fields and we grow our food, we are not responsible as foragers for finding whatever happens to be available. If we tend our crops and, our flocks, and we raise our flocks, we can, for instance, from a sheep, we can get a renewable source of material to make clothing. We can get, for example, from cows, dairy products. Of course, if I want a steak, I have to kill the cow. But we can get also reliable food supplies. We may find that we can get beasts of burden. These animals can carry things for us. But in one way or another, we are managing these animals and managing the kinds of things that they can provide for us. But then we can take a step or two beyond that. Arts and crafts will emerge as a way for us to differentiate ourselves. We may wear slightly different jewelry, for example, from the person next door. We may adorn our homes with slightly different products, objects of beauty, of interest from the people next door. We may adorn our towns. We may adorn our temples. We may adorn our palaces with the products of human invention and human skill and put them around us. And the arts and the crafts, as we know them, will begin to emerge. Finally, we get writing. One of the great early achievements. Now, we'll talk much about writing and forms of writing and why we have writing at all and why we have writing in the forms in which we have it in later lectures. Right now, I simply want to signal that with the emergence of writing, we see one of the remarkable achievements of this Neolithic revolution. One of the remarkable achievements of the emergence of civilization, and we cross a threshold into the historical period. For now, we begin to have durable forms of evidence. Durable forms of evidence that permit us, in the present, to eavesdrop on the doings and the thinkings of people long ago. We get to watch them telling us concretely what they did, and we get to watch them trying to manage how we will think about them. And thus history, as a dual process of discovering what happened and of reflecting on all of the different reflections on what happened, is born almost simultaneously. Now, these key elements seem to mark virtually all civilizations. this basic process, something like this Neolithic revolution, something like the emergence of cities, agriculture, the domestication of animals, and so on. Our job here is going to be to talk about Western civilization. This is not to imply that there are no other civilizations. That would be absurd. We could speak, for example, of African civilization. We could talk of Chinese civilization. On somewhat smaller scales, we might talk of Maya civilization or Aztec civilization. It will be my contention, in discussing with you some of these foundations of Western civilization over this course of lectures, that the West is unique, that the West is distinctive, that there are things about the West that make it different. But you won't hear me leading cheers. I am not here to praise. I am here to explain. Our task is to understand. That, it seems to me, is crucial.